We are happy to have Andrew or Andy Mashes with us this morning. Probably many of you remember him sharing with us before. He worked with EMM for about 10 years, and he shared here in our congregation representing them. Then he worked several years, I believe, Church World Services, I'll get it right. And he shared a message here while he was with them. And just recently he took a job with Mennonite Life as storyteller. I'll let him talk a little bit more about that position as he wishes. For some of you, you might wonder what Mennonite Life is. For many years we knew things as the Mennonite Historical Society, the Mennonite Information Center, and the Hans Herrhaus, and that sort of got relabeled under a new thing, Mennonite Life, and there's special titles for each of those places as well. I'm not hoping that he necessarily has to change jobs again before he would be invited to have a message here. He and his family attend Branch and Vine Congregation in Lancaster. His wife Hillary has responsibility there, I believe, with children's ministry today, so they couldn't be here. He has two sons, Theodore and Simon, going into first grade and fourth grade at Lancaster Mennonite this coming year. And he was informing me that one of my great nieces is sort of a hero of their youngest son. That caused them to spend more money. His son needed to have some of the same nice toys that Louisa has. So at this time I will read the scripture before Andrew brings the message to us. From Psalm 78, 4-7. We will not hide them from the descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our ancestors to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commands. Blessings, Andrew, as you share with us. Okay. We'll forever be short, and that is my cross to bear. Good morning, everybody. It's wonderful to be here again with you all. I knew I was in trouble, admittedly, when I walked outside of my house this morning, and it just seemed like it was a really nice July day. And I knew that there would probably be a decent amount of people who would be on vacation, but for the people that are here, their one thought is, man, I really gotta get out of here, cause it's such a nice day. So bear with me, hopefully I don't go too long and keep you from that beautiful sunshine, but I think where we're going to go this morning, you'll thoroughly enjoy. As Merle mentioned, this is not my first time here. I'm honored to be here with you all. Let's see if that stays. I got to say, and thank you, Merle, for the introduction, kind of giving an overview of the different professional settings that I've had over the last, I've now lived in here in Lancaster for 15 years. When I originally accepted a position at EMM, when I was 23, I'm going to be 40 next year, but I was 23, so maybe it was longer than 15 years, man, oh man. And since then, you know, I was engaged for 3 days. Getting that job at EMM is actually what propelled me to propose, because I knew that I could tell her parents that, well, I have a job now. That's good, right? And so,
since then, we moved here as a new couple, and now, I honestly would not want to raise these two boys anywhere else. I love it here. This is my home. And so thank you as a community for welcoming us. But I gotta say, even though I've been here through various roles, I gotta say that I think this particular role might be at least the coolest, job title I've had. Storyteller. It's like, I have it on a business card that I give to people now, and it's storyteller. Like, to me, that's just so neat. And I will admit, when people ask, oh, what are you doing now? Well, you know, I'm at Mennonite Night Life. Oh, what's your job title? Storyteller. They're like, oh, that's good. And so what I'd like to do this morning is talk a little bit about stories. What are stories? That was one interesting thing in the job interview. So I've been there for, I don't know, what, 6 weeks, 5, 6 weeks. So it's pretty fresh. But they asked me in the interview, what makes a good story? Which I thought was an interesting thing to ask. Oh, did I go the wrong way? There we go. A little bit about Mennonite Life. As Marla mentioned, you know, we are the conglomerate now of what was a variety of different organizations, including the Mennonite Information Center, now Visitor Center, the Mennonite Historical Society, and previously the Hans Herr House, now the 1719 Museum. And I have been thinking in my head, what is the best way that I can convey in one sentence what we do at Mennonite Life? Because there's a lot that we do. And the best way that I can describe it, that I've kind of... These are my words. This is not an official mission statement or slogan by any means. This is my own words. But the way that I best describe it is that Mennonite Life is designed to preserve and promote Anabaptism in the 21st century in Lancaster County. And I've seen that happen in a variety of different ways that are really, really unique and fascinating, I will say. But as far as stories are concerned, When I was asked what makes a good story, I had to really think about it. I mean, this is stuff that sometimes we go over in elementary school. We learn about characters. We learn about setting. That's what makes a good story. We learn about that stories have beginnings and middles and ends. There is a flow to them. And what I find so fascinating is story is exactly the way and the only way that God decided to speak to his creation through story. Now, usually in stories, you have a variety of different things like problems that occur right after the beginning. You know, characters are introduced. You get to learn a little bit about their relationship dynamics between each other. You learn a little bit about their own personalities. You start to invest in who they are. But then a problem happens. And that's where the majority of the middle really engages with that particular problem that has to be solved. And usually, not always, but usually, by the end, there is some kind of resolution to that problem. You know, any novel you've ever read, any movie you've ever watched, usually has that kind of cadence to it, that kind of structure to it. One of my favorite examples is if you look at one of my favorite movies of all time, Star Wars. So, who are the characters? You've got your Luke Skywalkers, your Princess Leias, your Han Solos. Settings. Technically, the setting is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And so you have your beginnings, R2-D2 and C-3PO. They hold the Death Star plans, and either know the story or you don't. I don't have to belabor the point. But admittedly, in the end, there is resolution. The Death Star blows up. Chewbacca doesn't get a medal at the end of the ceremony. It's very sad. But there is that particular structure to it. And we see that time and time again in Scripture as well. Every character that you engage with, whether it be a prophet or just a king or a person, or a disciple in the Old and New Testament, usually has this kind of structure and rhythm to their story. And that's why I find what is in Psalm so fascinating, because it reminds me, the passage in Psalm reminds me exactly what happened when the Israelites finally crossed the Jordan River. So after they crossed the Jordan River, after all that they had been through, God comes to Joshua and says, now I want you to find people to gather stones. And as you gather stones, make an altar. And it's questioned, why are we doing this? God specifically says, so your ancestors can come and remember the wonderful deeds that I have done. And you see that over and over and over again. Remember God's imperative that we remember who we are, that we remember the things he has done, especially in times of turmoil, in times of strife, in times where, like the Israelites, you're in exile in Babylon, and it's hard to remember the wonderful things that God has done, especially if it's generations ago. The Anabaptist story, for example, is a constant reminder to me of the wonderful things that God has done and the faithfulness and obedience that people exuded in that story. You take a Felix Mons who now 500 years ago last year in his mother's house witnessed the first baptism in Zurich, Switzerland. And it was only 2 years later that he became the first martyr of the Anabaptist story. And as we all know, he would not be the last martyr. But death, what I find so interesting, was not the end of the story. It was less than, 6 months later, in 1527, that a group of Anabaptists then gathered, in Augsburg. And what's so fascinating about this particular meeting that happened in Augsburg just a few months after the very first martyr was they didn't gather to say, okay, how can we hide from the authorities? How can we protect ourselves? They met to map out a plan of where they could go out and carry the gospel. That even though they witnessed their own brethren die and many, many more be killed after, they said, death is not the end of our story. And through courage and obedience, they went out. But what's fascinating about this particular event, you see all these arrows of these different places that people were called to share the gospel and to plant churches. What's interesting is that every single person who was sent out from this meeting was martyred within 2 years of this meeting. Now, I don't know about you, but that would be demoralizing. But God said, this is not the end. Death is not the end of the story. 500 years later, it could have stopped right there. The movement could have stopped right there. But it didn't. It persevered. And now 500 years later, there are Anabaptists all over the planet Earth, expressing this particular way of viewing faith in very unique and radical ways. And so this is the story that we hope to preserve at Mennonite Life through our historical society, but also promote and tell through places like our visitor center. So what is your story? Who is Whitmer Heights and First Deaf Mennonite Churches? There are characters. There's a setting. Something that I'd like to read for you is a letter that I found. The pleasure that I have at work is that as a history nut, I always told my dad that I wanted to be a history teacher. Took me 20 years, but I got there. I have the honor and pleasure of really digging into the archives of various congregations. And admittedly, one can often ask, why do you keep all this stuff? Bulletins and old programs and photos. The reason that we preserve these things is to be able to remember the beautiful and wonderful ways that God has worked within us as a community and as a people. So I'd like to read you something that I've found. We're going to go on a little adventure. Many of you may be very familiar with the dynamics and aspects of the Whitmer Heights story, but it never hurts to remember sometimes. 1945. Paul Grable and Aaron Weaver were both selected to do some investigating to see if there was any possibility of starting a Mennonite church for the deaf. There were deaf people in Aaron Weaver's family, so he knew sign language. Finally, in the latter part of 1945, deaf services were held in the homes of families who were deaf or had deaf children. By 1946, the group had grown considerably larger, and so every 2 weeks services were held at Rossmere Mennonite Church, which just so happens to be the last church I spoke at a couple weeks ago. Israel Rohr was ordained minister in 1949. He knew sign language since he had deaf parents and also had a deaf son. In 1951, deaf services were held in the upper room of Mellinger Mennonite Church. Esther Groff in particular has been greatly appreciated by all of the deaf community. Many times deaf people feel looked down upon by hearing people. They feel those that are with them are ashamed of them. Esther never gave them this feeling, at least not intentionally, and I hope she never will. Esther deserves more praise than I can give her for all the time she has spent willingly with this community. In 1956, Mabel Clemmer donated some land for a place to build a deaf Mennonite church. This place is right off of Lincoln Highway, about 6 miles east of Lancaster, on Whitmer Road. Through many prayers, enough money was given to begin building the church. The first active members were largely the Weegley Laymans, John and Helen Schenck, and my parents, Raymond and Elizabeth Rohr. Beginning with Israel Rohr as pastor, George Euler was soon ordained and took over being minister for several years. This was a great step in the right direction. Now the deaf had a church they could call their own. Deaf people from other states moved near just to be part of the congregation. And just like young people in hearing Mennonite churches have Mennonite Youth Fellowship, so did the deaf. But they named themselves Deaf Youth for Christ, a small newsletter called Silent Messenger was sent to deaf all over the United States, notifying them of upcoming events. In 1966, Elvin Stolzfus, a graduate of Eastern Mennonite College and the University of Tennessee, majoring in deaf leadership, came to First Deaf. And since then, the church has been growing. This is my church. I've been raised by two deaf Christian parents going to First Deaf Mennonite Church. I was baptized at this church, therefore I am also a member. I saw many others change their lives in this church. It was written by Darlene Rohr. your story is one of faithfulness. It is one of obedience, and it is one of compassion to a people and a community, admittedly often neglected by a very loud world. That's one thing that I've noticed at my time, briefly at Mennonite Life, is there's a segment of culture and that I never thought I would engage in professionally. And that is the Lancaster County tourism culture. And it's wild. The lengths and the lengths of distance that people will go to visit here is kind of staggering. And I feel like being sandwiched right next to my children just love how close I am to their school and that I can just visit anytime. They think it's the greatest thing ever. Not really. And so I'm now sandwiched in what I call the belly of the beast. So you got Tanger outlets on one side, you got Dutch Wonderland on the other side, and we're like just sandwiched right in the middle. And people come from all over. Here we go. But they came here first. This place, this congregation, through a particular vision, saw that there was an opportunity to relate to this, let's call it, fascinating subculture that is the Lancaster County tourism ecosystem. And decided through conversations with places like Eastern Mennonite Board and Lancaster Conference and things to establish an information center. And so this place became the first harbinger of this very particular and very unique kind of ministry. And I want you to understand, if you dig into the history, as I've had now the honor and privilege to do, you come to realize the impact that something like that has had. A few years after the Mennonite Information Center being housed here at First Def, eventually there was sort of a convergence of different events that had happened where there was decided to move it to Route 30. And this very particular ministry of sorts, I'll call it that, was coming up from St. Petersburg, Florida. And I want to tell you a little bit about the biblical tabernacle experience that, admittedly, I will say, still attracts people from every corner of the world. The other day, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I was standing in the visitor center. I usually like to try to make a stop over there every day just to see what's going on, just kind of talk to tourists, see what brought them here. And it's fascinating, you know, the biblical tabernacle experience is something that people really gravitate towards. And a couple weeks ago, fascinating. There was a whole, I don't know, like two huge van loads. It had to be at least 30 people from New Jersey came, and they all had these matching shirts. And what was hilarious, they flooded into the visitor center, but what was hysterical was that they were all Haitian Creole women. It was a women's group from New Jersey, who, yes, like many groups, they went to Sight and Sound to see a show, and they wanted to visit the tabernacle afterwards. But what I found so fascinating was, now this is a little bit of my hat working in immigration services prior to this. The day before, a statement was made by the U.S. government that they wanted many Haitians to leave this country. But they came anyway. And that was just a very humbling experience to watch them engage with the tabernacle amidst what might be a considerable amount of fear and anxiety around what their community is witnessing and facing. This church has also supported missions in a variety of different ways. Finding newsletters from Wes Neuswanger was really fascinating. And as the story goes, so when I got this job, something that I knew but had kind of forgot after a while, that my mother reminded me of, and this is a true story. So my parents get married in 1982. My father, both of them were actually new, let's call them converts, to the Mennonite Church up in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Okay? Not a lot of Mennonite churches up there, admittedly. And Lancaster was, as you maybe can imagine, was seen as like the Holy Land of sorts. So when I called my mom and I told her that I got this job, I was like, yeah, Mom, I'm going to be working at, you know, the Biblical Tabernacle. And she goes, Andrew, you do realize that that's where your father and I spent our honeymoon in 1982. And I was like, I forgot about that. So in their infinite wisdom, they decided to spend their honeymoon, which, you know, you're supposed to only get one of those, hopefully, in your lifetime. They decided to come to the Biblical Tabernacle. And last night I was actually at my mom's house. I took my kids over to visit her, and I was like, I gotta know. Now that I've been here for a few weeks, I gotta know, Mom. If you can reach back into the recesses of your brain 44 years ago, what made you want to go to the Biblical Tabernacle for your honeymoon? Vacation I could see, but still. And what she told me I felt very profound. She said, Andy, you need to realize that in 1982, I had been a Christian for only 2 years. I was a baby Christian. And it was the best way that I could see the Bible that had changed my life come to life. And that just kind of really hit me. That is what she takes away from that experience now 44 years later. But even back then, that her posture towards her newly found faith was one that she wanted to experience through this experience. And it made me think about all of the thousands upon thousands of people that come to this place every single year. And their own stories, their own backgrounds. What brings them here? And what I find fascinating the most, I will admit, and you might not believe this, but it's true. People who come, originally they might come to see the tabernacle experience. Maybe they are intrigued by Amish culture. But so often what they leave away with is a new understanding, perspective of who we are as a community. And traditionally what we believe. And they are enamored with it. Things that I think we take for granted, things that we've kind of grown up with our entire lives that just seem normal to me. I will tell you, are not normal. My favorite example was on my second day. There's a video that we show in the basement of the visitor center called We Believe. And basically it goes through four different hallmark tenets that Anabaptists believe. And I remember my second day, the theater was packed with people from who were visiting the tabernacle, and they went downstairs to view this movie. And there's a scene in this movie that's clipped from the movie from, I think it was from the 80s, The Radicals. Has anyone ever seen this film? It's free on YouTube if you want to go check it out. But it is a retelling of those first baptisms that people like Felix Mons were a part of. And it really tells the story of Margaret and Michael Sattler. And there's a scene clipped out from the movie, interjected in this film, where Michael Sattler is giving a speech to this group of new Anabaptist followers in a barn. And he said, and this speech is now 500 years old. And he says things like, we will no longer bow down to tyrants and kings and rulers and authorities, but we will worship the one and only Jesus Christ. And that second day that I was there, people clapped at the end of this statement. And I was like blown away. These people who are coming from all over the country, sometimes all over the world, with different perspectives on faith, there is something about that story that captivates people. And every single time, people leave that place with fresh perspective than what they came. Eventually, this congregation grew to the point where, I think I was reading, 1995 was where there was this desire to start a service for those who could hear. And finding things like the original welcome card that was in the lobby of Whitmer Heights Church at that time, was also really fascinating to encounter. But this is your story, and it's one that I truly do believe you are called to remember, because you all have been obedient and faithful to the calling of God in this particular place, in this particular time. And you carry with you, and I can say this with now full confidence because I've seen it, you carry with you a tradition the world desperately needs. My first day, I went through what is what we call the collections building, the historical society side of campus. And on the wall is one of my favorite quotes from Menno Simons in 1541. And it's something that I wanted to put, that I put at the end of each of these, because I want you to fully grasp what it was that the Anabaptist, the spirit in which the Anabaptists carried with them. And hopefully, knowing this, you can carry it in your own life. That it is through the backs of this faithfulness and this obedience that we are here today. As Menno Simons once faithfully said, we preach as much as possible, both by day and by night, in houses and in fields, in forests and wastes, hither and yon, at home or abroad, in prisons and dungeons, in water and in fire, on the scaffold and on the wheel. Before lords and princes, through mouth and pen, with possessions and blood, with life, and for many, many of them, death. We have done this for many years, and we are not ashamed of the gospel of the glory of Christ. I invite you to continue to remember your story, to tell your story to a wandering and watching world, and listen for the Spirit of God and retain that obedience and faithfulness to where he has called you next. Amen.